Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, October 22, 2022, read by Claire Noyes. City's jobless rate drops to 3%. Midland is third in state for the largest year-over-year decrease in unemployment. By Mella McEwen. Midland's labor market continues to rank among the state's best, with the Tall City posting the lowest unemployment rate in September. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, fell to 3% from 3.3% in August and is well below the 4.9% reported last September. Odessa saw its unemployment rate fall to 4.3% from 4.9% in August. The rate was 7% a year ago. In fact, according to Gabriel Mike Guzman, manager, dissemination and outreach labor market and career information, Odessa led the state with the largest year-over-year decrease in unemployment at 2.7 percentage points. Midland was third with a 1.9 percentage point drop. Quote, "We've recovered real well," end quote, from the pandemic, which saw unemployment reach double digits, observed Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin office. In September 2019, he observed Midland's unemployment rate was 2.1%. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone, Taylor noted that the civilian labor force remains strong, rising to 103,969 from 103,592 in August. It is almost 1,100 more than the 102,887 reported a year earlier. The number of employed Midlanders jumped by 700 to 100,845 and is almost 3,000 more than the 97,867 employed last September. Quote, "What's not letting us grow anymore is the inability to hire more people," end quote, Taylor said, acknowledging that is an issue being felt nationwide. "It can take 2 to 3 months to fill a job posted with the commission," he said. Quote, "We've been in a job seeker's market for some time," end quote. Initial claims for unemployment benefits are also down, he said. The commission said the number of unemployed Midlanders fell more than 300 to 3,124 from 3,446 in August. That number has fallen by almost 1,900 from September's count of 5,020 unemployed. He estimated there are more than 300 enrolled in training programs at Midland College, Odessa College, and Howard County Junior College, receiving training in everything from commercial driver's licenses to education, HVAC technology, automotive and diesel technology, and electric linemen. His office is also working with Midland Memorial Hospital, Medical Center Hospital, and other hospitals in the region on skills development. Quote, "People in CDL medical training have an 85% placement rate. They get good wages, have good skills. You can't go wrong with training," end quote, he said. "Things are looking great going into the final quarter of the year," he said. Quote, "It's a great job picture, a great market," end quote, Taylor said. Julian Alvarez, Texas Workforce Commissioner representing labor, said in a virtual media briefing alongside Guzman that childcare has been a concern in attracting workers back to the labor market. He said that with the latest tranche of federal funding, the commission has been able to inform employers looking to expand in or locate to Texas they now have the funding to provide childcare services on their premises. Taylor emphasized that his Permian Basin office also has funding to help those seeking to find jobs or return to work with childcare expenses. Midland added 900 jobs from August to September, led by the mining, logging, and construction sector with 500 new jobs. This sector, dominant in the Midland MSA, had wages totaling $1,017 billion in the first quarter of the year. The government sector followed with the 200 new jobs. The trade, transportation, and utilities sector, education and health services sector, and leisure and hospitality sector each added 100 new jobs. Manufacturing was the only sector to lose jobs, falling by 100 jobs during the month. For the 12 months from September 2021 to September 2022, Midland added 4,800 jobs for a growth rate of 4.7%. mining, logging, and construction again led with the addition of 2,900 jobs. Leisure and hospitality followed with the creation of 900 new jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities added 400 jobs, while manufacturing and the education and health services sector each grew by 200 jobs. The financial activities, the professional and business services, and the other services sector each added 100 jobs. The government sector was the only one to lose jobs during the year, shedding 100 jobs. Statewide, the unemployment rate fell to 3.8% from 4.2%. Texas added 40,000 non-farm jobs in September, more than doubling the number added in August. The state also set employment highs for an 11th consecutive month, with total non-farm employment reaching 13,571,800 jobs. Texas has added 721,800 jobs since September 2021. Amarillo and Austin Round Rock remain tied for lowest employment statewide for a second month at 2.8% each, followed by Midland with 3% and College Station, Bryan, and Lubbock at 3.1% each. The highest unemployment was McAllen-Edinburg Mission at 6.7%. Democratic nominee for governor talks teacher pay, testing during appearance Friday, by Ben Schaefer. Texas Democratic gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke held a rally at the Grand Texan Hotel 3 days before early voting for state elections began on Monday. O'Rourke talked about his stance on education, expanding Medicaid, and investing in infrastructure. The candidate praised Texas educators in attendance and called them heroes. Quote, "There's no good reason that you should be so badly underpaid relative to teachers across this country," end quote, he said. O'Rourke added that on average, Texas teachers are underpaid by about $7,500, and West Texas teachers can be underpaid anywhere from $10,000 to $16,000. He said Texas economy is the ninth largest in the world and has the resources to compensate teachers better. Quote, "We have the wealth and the resources to pay these teachers enough so that they don't have to work a second or a third job," end quote, O'Rourke said. Quote, "To show them the respect when they retire by ensuring they have a cost of living adjustment every year going forward," end quote. He said when he wins the race for governor, his administration will cancel the state of Texas assessments of academic readiness, STAR test. Quote, "Given that learning loss and the trauma these kids have gone through, you don't lose valuable classroom time to a high-stakes, high-pressure, standardized test that in no way effectively measures the potential of that kid or the effort expended on her behalf," end quote, he said. The audience cheered. He said he will make public education a priority again in Texas. Quote, "And no more threatening to take your public tax dollars out of your public classrooms and sending them to private schools in the form of vouchers. We're going to find out how to make sure they get the best education possible," end quote, O'Rourke said. He said it's been hard for him to find supporters of Governor Abbott who will disagree with him on this education stance and called it a foundational, fundamental value that all Texans agree on. O'Rourke began discussing Medicaid. He said the Lone Star State is one of the last states to not accept Medicaid expansion. Quote, "In just the raw numbers, this is what it means," end quote, O'Rourke said. Quote, $10 billion that you and I and other income taxpayers have sent up to D.C. is now being distributed to every other state, almost in the Union, except for Texas," end quote. He said if Texas took the Medicaid expansion deal that's currently on the table, Texas would bring back that $10 billion every year. Quote, "Not just creating hundreds of thousands of jobs, including jobs for medical providers, nurses, doctors, and behavioral health specialists, but we connect more people with care who today are going without," end quote, he said. O'Rourke said Texas is the 51st in the nation in access to mental health care, and that means the largest provider of mental health services in Texas is the county jail system. He said hospitals in Texas have been losing money and 16 rural hospitals have been shut down during Abbott's time in office. Quote, "I'm going to rural communities right now, not far from where we are today in Midland, where folks literally cannot get online. Try finishing your education or finding a job if you cannot get online," end quote, he said. He said there was, quote, "nothing but nothing," end quote, that excuses the fact that some Texans don't have internet access or are otherwise unable to access it. O'Rourke stated he was not as partisan as some think and would bring Republican leaders to the table and partner with them to help their communities. MDC Firehawk sign lease agreement. Firehawk to use MDC-owned land outside of Midland city limits for hybrid rocket engine testing. By Mella McEwen. Midland's community of aerospace companies is expanding as Melbourne, Florida-based Firehawk Aerospace has signed a lease agreement with the Midland Development Corporation. The lease agreement is for land owned by MDC north of Highway 191 and west of Midland city limits. The site will allow Firehawk to test its hybrid rocket engines in Midland, a good distance north of Highway 191. Firehawk has developed a hybrid rocket engine that have the efficiency and power of a liquid bipropellant engine, but are simpler, safer, and less costly by utilizing the company's solid-state, 3D-printed fuel that lowers production costs. The company has previously performed engine burn tests at NASA's Stennis Space Center. Their Series B funding round is enabling additional testing and production, with potential uses in defense second-stage boosters and in space propulsion. Firehawk's inert fuel also holds promise for multi-payload launches. Stephen Lowry, MDC chairman, said in a statement announcing the lease, quote, "We're thrilled to bring Firehawk Aerospace to Midland to join our growing aerospace community. Midland has a unique spirit and a confidence enabling innovation and problem-solving. These characteristics provide an environment for companies like Firehawk to flourish," end quote. Will Edwards, chief executive officer of Firehawk, said in that same announcement, quote, "There are many reasons why Midland is a great place for Firehawk to stand up our test operations, but the most important one is the community. The city of Midland immediately embraced our mission, and we can tell they are investing the resources to turn them into the next great aerospace town," end quote. Sarah Harris, executive director of the MDC, told the Reporter-Telegram she anticipates Firehawk will be at its new Midland location, quote, "as soon as their ground operations team can assemble all the necessary components," end quote. Police arrest two ECISD sixth graders for making threats to campus. By Mercedes Cordero. Two sixth graders at Wilson and Young Middle School were arrested Thursday after making a threat to the campus, according to the Ector County ISD. ECISD police received a report of a shooting threat and discovered that the threat was made Wednesday by two sixth graders. The students told others in the school cafeteria that, quote, "they had a gun in their backpack," end quote. Both students were arrested after admitting to making the threats. They were charged with threat or exhibition of a weapon on school grounds or a bus. A Class A misdemeanor. Quote, "As we continue to say, school and school district leaders will take seriously any mention of school violence. If found to be true, students will be charged criminally as well as receive school discipline," end quote. The district said in a press release. Quote, "Thank you to all students, families, and staff members who report instances like this. It takes everyone in our community working together to ensure the safety of our schools," end quote. This is the second arrest ECISD police have made this week. A Permian high school freshman was arrested Sunday after the Odessa Police Department received a call about a possible threat that was made to the school. Police arrest Bonham student for threats. By Mercedes Cordero. A sixth grader at Bonham Middle School was arrested Friday after making threats, according to Ector County ISD. The student, quote, "became upset in class and threatened to bring a gun to school and shoot students," end quote, according to the press release. He was charged with threat or exhibition of a weapon, school grounds, or bus, a Class A misdemeanor. Friday's arrest makes the fourth this week. Two sixth graders at Wilson and Young Middle School and a Permian High School freshman were arrested after making a threat to the campus. Affidavit. Online advertisement leads to soliciting prostitution arrests. By Mercedes Cordero. A joint prostitution operation between the Department of Public Safety and the Midland County Sheriff's Office used an online advertisement that resulted in 8 arrests, according to court documents. Jean Powell, 57, of Gardendale, Felipe de Jesus Lemus, 29, of Van Wheeler, Ronnie Dixon, 38, of Midland, Trey Lucky, 51, of Midland, Austin Barnes, 38, of Odessa, Christopher Holmes, 27, of Lufkin, Albert Solis, 37, of Sweetwater, and Wilbert Ruiz, 40, of Burleson, were all arrested on soliciting prostitution, a state felony. the eight men all responded to an online advertisement where they agreed to pay for sex, according to an arrest affidavit. The suspects would agree to the price and meeting location where the undercover officers were waiting. DPS said in a press release the main goal of the operation, quote, was to target individuals soliciting prostitutes, as well as to identify and apprehend individuals suspected to be involved in human trafficking by using various websites to solicit sexual acts, end quote. Among those arrested was Powell, the public information officer with the Texas Department of Transportation's Odessa District. The suspects were all released from Midland County Jail on $1,500 bonds. Crude oil finishes weak above $85, by Mella McEwen. Crude price volatility continued to have traders ping-ponging between concerns about a global economic slowdown as central banks try to tame inflation and concerns about tight supplies. West Texas intermediate prices on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 3 of 5 trading days. Prices opened the week dipping 15 cents, followed by a $2.64 drop before regaining their footing and rising the rest of the week. A $2.73 increase wiped out Tuesday's loss, followed by a 43% gain Thursday. The new near-month trading contract of December took effect Friday, with prices adding 54 cents to end at $85.05 per barrel, down from $85.61 at last Friday's close. The posted price, which dipped below $80 a barrel Tuesday, ended the week at $81.53, according to Plains All-American. Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, said in a statement sent to the Reporter Telegram that the recent output cuts announced by members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Nations, as well as geopolitical conflicts, highlight why domestic production must be encouraged and U.S. energy exports must continue. He also called for continued investment in energy infrastructure, from liquefied natural gas export terminals to pipelines and refineries to meet global energy needs. Quote, "It's past time to stop using short-sighted ploys to stabilize prices and develop a long-term strategy to address our growing energy needs in coordination with Texas oil and gas producers who are ready to meet this challenge," end quote, he wrote by email. Moreover, he continued, quote, "constantly pointing the finger at energy producers will not lower global prices. Oil and gas companies are price takers, not price makers. Global energy markets determine the costs of petroleum products. Policies that get to the root of the problem and address U.S. supply of oil and gas resources are what America really needs. This includes tackling production variables such as streamlining permitting processes for additional infrastructure or increasing onshore and offshore development opportunities," end quote. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas, with OANDA, noted in his daily e-newsletter that risk appetite is returning to the markets on hopes the Federal Reserve won't be sending the economy into a severe recession. Quote, "The oil market is still looking tight, and that should support crude prices staying above the $80 level. As the war in Ukraine persists, it looks like we might see escalating sanctions on not just Russian, but also Iran," end quote, Moya wrote in his newsletter. The risks of supply disruptions remain elevated, and that should keep prices trending higher as long as China's outlook doesn't take a turn for the worse, end quote. It was a rough week for natural gas prices, which showed steep declines each of the 5 trading days, beginning with a 45% tumble below $6 per MCF Monday. Natural gas futures on the NYMEX ended the week with a 40-cent slide that sent prices below $5 per MCF, closing the week at $4.96 per MCF, below the $6.453 at last Friday's close and a 7-month low. John Paisy, president, Stratus Advisors, noted to Reporter Telegram by email that natural gas prices have been moving downward since mid-August and fell below the 200-day moving average on October 13th. He listed several reasons that prices have been falling, beginning with the accelerated pace with which natural gas working underground storage has been increasing. That includes storage levels in the eastern part of the U.S., which had been 9% below the seasonal average of the last 5 years at the beginning of September. But that gap has been closing since. Quote, "Storage levels have risen because of increasing production in the U.S. coupled with a slowdown in LNG exports. In part, because of an outage at Freeport LNG stemming from a fire-related incident, and at Cove Point because of regular maintenance," end quote, he wrote. He added that storage levels in Europe have also been increasing and are currently at 93%, significantly higher than the continent's November 1st target of 80%. Pays said mild winter weather is also weakening prices, with winter forecasts pointing to a relatively mild winter in the U.S. and average to slightly below average temperatures in Northwest Europe and above average temperatures for Northeastern Europe and Scandinavia. Quote, the sentiment of the natural gas traders has been negative. Since June, the positions of natural gas traders have been becoming increasingly net short and are at the most negative level since 2020, end quote, he wrote. Texas rig count increases. Permian count remains flat. By Mella McEwen. U.S. drilling activity rose a second consecutive week, powered by growth in Texas activity. The Permian Basin, however, remained flat for the week. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes, in the weekly rig count it has issued since the 1940s, said Friday the U.S. rig count rose 2 to 771. That's 229, or 42% more than the 542 the company reported last October. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil rose 2 to 612, the highest since March 2020, and 169 more than the 443 at work a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was unchanged at 157, 58 more than the 99 counted last year. Texas rig count jumped 6 to 371 and 122 more than the 249 at work statewide a year earlier. New Mexico's rig count fell by 4 to 105. Colorado, 2, and Wyoming, 1, joined Texas as producing states to see increases, while Louisiana, 1, and Utah, 1, joined New Mexico as producing states that saw declines during the week. The Permian Basin held steady at 346 rigs, 78 more than the 268 drilling around the basin last year. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian, with 66 rigs, down 2 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, was second with 36 rigs, also down 2 for the week. Martin County is a close third, reporting 35 rigs for a second week. Reeves County had 34 rigs, down 1, and Midland County reported 31 rigs for a fifth week. Loving County had 23 rigs, up 3 rigs, and the biggest jump of the week. Upton County had 19 rigs unchanged for the week, while Howard County had 18 rigs, also unchanged for the week. Ward County added 2 rigs for 17 at work within county lines. Glasscock County had 14 rigs, unchanged for the week. Enverus Foundation, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count fell by 14 in the last week to a peak of 883 rigs the week ended October 19th. The count is still up by 1% in the last month and up 34% year over year. While the Gulf Coast and Williston Basin were flat at 119 and 42 rigs, respectively, all other major plays saw weekly declines, the foundation reported. The Anadarko Basin fell by 4 to 80 rigs running, and the Permian was down by 2 at 329. The Appalachian and DG Basins each dropped 1 rig to reach 56 and 22.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American on Sunday, October 23rd. Odessans Go Big for Halloween by Michael Bauer. Larry Avila used not to decorate his house each Halloween. That quickly changed this year as the Odessan who lives with his wife and 2 kids on Desert Ridge decided to go all out with the decor. We had done some small direct decorations since we're kind of new to the area, Avila said. This is probably the first year that we've started decorating more. The Avila family, which moved from El Paso a few years ago, is one of many around the country who've embraced Halloween decorations. This year, their yard includes a giant skeleton, a giant werewolf, spider web, and a few inflatables, including one character, Baby Yoda, from the Star Wars Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian. There's also a spider that's supposed to spook trick-or-treaters. The wolf, if you walk close to it, will start howling, Avila said. That skeleton moves his eyes. The spider is supposed to jump towards people after stepping on a sensor. They're hoping to add more before the end of the month. Avila says what got him started on going out this year's decor was his inner child. I guess it's mostly me, Avila said. We all have that inner kid inside us. Now that I'm older, I want to start decorating more. But he also does the decorations for children. I guess it's for the kids, Avila said, but it's also for myself because I like Halloween decorations. I like seeing kids passing by and watching the decorations. Obviously, the decorations haven't been cheap, and Avila wasn't afraid to give an estimate about how much he has spent on this year's decor. I can tell that it's expensive, Avila said. It's probably about $1,500 to $2,000. That's not including the electric bill. However, it's been a labor of love for Avila. It all got started when he and his family were shopping at Home Depot. It was a random day, Avila said. We're at Home Depot and we saw the skeleton and I said, hey, I like that. That's pretty neat. I saw all the other Halloween decorations they had going on and I wanted them. I think it's more of an investment than anything. I'll keep on adding more. While Halloween is coming up, Avila says he's not going to be quick to take down the decorations. In fact, he plans at least to keep the skeleton up through Christmas. I'm going to add a little Santa Claus hat and see what more I can get for it, Avila said. He said his hopes his house becomes as the house of Santa's skeleton. The Avilas are far from the only people who have decorated their houses with Halloween decorations this year in town. That includes his neighborhood. Different people have their own themes going on, Avila said of his neighbor's decorations. It's all fun. Avila says people have stopped by to look at his decorations. Mostly when we're outside, people will stop by and say they love it, Avila said. He hopes to add more before the end of the month. It's hard to get some of the stuff, Avila said. Some people buy the stuff early, but the prices have gone up. Enrollment on Upward Trend at UTPB by Ruth Campbell. Having served more than 7,000 students last year, University of Texas, Permian Basin, is looking at a continued upward trend. When you look at fall, which is a snapshot that we write now for registration that just happened, we're overall up about 4%, President Sandra Woodley said. So 5,713 is the number of headcount for fall enrollment. We're really proud of that. We work really hard to make sure that we turn the enrollment around. We had a little bit of a dip last year, post-COVID. Some challenges that we were there. But if you look at our students' credit hours, in other words, the number of classes that students are taking, that's up 7.5%. Many more students are taking full loads, Woodley added. She said some of that can be attributed to the Falcon Free program. One of the criteria was that you had to be a full-time, take at least 12 hours. We're really thrilled that 44% of our undergraduate students are receiving Falcon Free funding. I think with that, along with all the other scholarships that we have in place, we have more and more every year. The financial burden for our students is declining. They have the ability to take more hours, work fewer hours at external jobs to make ends meet. And our trends are very exciting right now. And headed up, Woodley said. UTPB has used its Falcon Free funds for this year, but she says it's a recurring amount of money. We have $1 million a year. We may be able to, with some additional scholarships, help some of the Falcon Free this spring. But for the most part, the Falcon Free was exhausted in the fall. We found a way to help all the students who qualified by the deadline. But even after the deadline, we were able to help additional students. We have other scholarship dollars as well that we're able to connect with Falcon Free, like Texas Grant, and of course the Pell Grant is part of that, to make sure that as many of the students as possible receive the tuition and required fee-free situation at the institution. The university is now registering students for next fall, and the rate is higher than at the time last year. Here we are in the fall, and people are applying for next fall. That's an exciting situation for us as well. We will continue to seek out additional scholarship dollars philanthropically. We're happy to announce that we had our first annual scholarship ball, and we're still counting. But we received over $500,000 in scholarship pledges there at the ball. All of that will go for scholarships for students. So that will help supplement Falcon Free and some of our other programs. For next fall, she added. Chief of Staff, VP of Communications and Marketing, Tatum Hubbard, says students are deciding where they want to go to school for next fall right now. Those juniors and seniors are already being hit, and they may know about the opportunity that exists at this university because we want them to choose us, Hubbard said. Woodley noted that fewer people registered for the first time in the spring. Most of our students have a full year of Falcon Free. There may be some students who might want to start for the first time in the spring, but for the most part, our students were packed by the full and the fall for Falcon Free, Woodley said. Most UTPB students come from within 150 miles of Odessa. We are focusing here on growing your own. We want to make sure that we serve the Permian Basin region, and we're very happy that we're the regional comprehensive institution here in the Permian Basin, and that we serve the students that are here in our surrounding areas, Woodley said. The university also saw an increase in international students. She said they had about 115 last year, and they will have more than double that number this year. Our transfers from the community college is up higher than it ever was, 36% increase in transfer students this fall. And, of course, our key transfer partners are Odessa College and Midland College. Most of the transfers come from Odessa College, but we have a growing number who also come to us from Midland College, she said, Woodley said. The rate of first-time in college students was up 43%. Graduate students are up 3.2%, and undergraduates are up 7%. It was a good fall, she said. Woodley said students are enrolling all the time, but there is a natural decline for the 16-week course. A lot of online classes are offered in 8-week time frames. That's part of the reason why we can't just look at the fall numbers to determine what our enrollment is, because when you count the number of students that we served in an entire academic year, it's over 7,000 students, Woodley said. She anticipates it will be over 7,000 when they get the final numbers this year. The unduplicated headcount annual numbers from the IPEDS, which stands for Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System. IPEDS is the National Center for Educational Statistics Core Post-Secondary Education Data Collection Program. The site said it's designed to help NCES meet its mandates to report full and complete statistics on the conditions of the post-secondary education in the United States, the site said. The unduplicated headcount annual numbers come from IPEDS. We report to the federal government on that particular data point, and they're finalizing the clarifying those data points right now. We should know within the next month officially what the report will be to IPEDS, but we know it will be more than 7,000 students, Woodley said. When we look at our fall headcount, for example, there are a number of different ways that's done. The operational data is one way that we capture students who are here in the fall, but we also have to submit data to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. And the coordinating board numbers are also lower because they don't count all of our students for the funding. There are a lot of enrollment numbers out there, and they're all correct. They just all have a different data definition depending on what the data are for, and so it makes a little bit confusing. But IPEDS is really our go-to metric because it's nationally reported and it's comparable to other institutions that counts all of our students, Woodley said. UTPB students run the gamut from first-timers, full-time students, to older students going back to school. We have multiple student populations, and they're all important to us. As a first-generation student has to work part-time, we never give up on that. We're very excited to have our adult students who work full-time. Many of them can only go part-time, Woodley said. In fact, over 55% of our students are part-time, which is significantly higher than any other UT school. We serve the students who go part-time and take longer than 6 years to graduate. It's one of the reasons why our graduation rates are lower. That particular metric only captures first-time, full-time students who generally come right out of high school and make their way through a cohort. But it's also true that we're growing that cohort, and so when you look at the significant increase in our first-time freshmen, higher than it's ever been, we care about that too. She added that both of those strategies are important and they're different. The work that Dr. Becky Spurlock, Vice President of Student Development Leadership, and her team, and Tatum Hubbard and her team have done on the recruiting and enrollment management and marketing is to make sure that we have specific strategic dedication to the appropriate population group because they need different things, Woodley said. Our adult students need different kinds of support than our freshman students. For example, in some ways, we want to make sure that we differentiate our student success initiatives and our recruiting and enrollment and our marketing in a way that we can serve all the student populations that can come here and get their degree, she added. She added that more than half of UTPB students are Hispanic. We're really proud of that designation. We're a minority-serving institution as well. I love the diversity on our campus in every way, from the student to the faculty to the staff. It's a very richly rewarding group of people to hang out with, and here I think there's a culture of belonging and inclusion here. People want to help others to succeed, and I think we're a general sense that we also want to learn more about different cultures and all things that we have here on the campus. We have quite a melting pot here, and we're proud of that, Woodley said. Most of the students are women, and she noted that's a national phenomenon, but she's not sure why that is. She added there's a lot of theories out there. We want to make sure that we help preserve the trend. We need all of our men and women to go to college, and that's like to support that, Woodley said. Local news roundup. Woman arrested for publishing intimate video with teen boy. An Odessa woman was arrested Tuesday after another woman told police she sent her a video of a 16-year-old engaged in sexual conduct. According to the Odessa Police Department report, a 44-year-old woman went into the police department back in August to report receiving the video. She explained she, Elizabeth Garcia, 47, agreed a few months prior to end the relationship between two 16-year-olds after discovering the pair had been sharing photographs of themselves engaged in sexual conduct. The woman said they later discovered the teens had rekindled their relationship. According to the report, the woman said Garcia retransmitted a video she thought had been deleted. When an officer spoke with Garcia, she admitted she sent the video hoping it would embarrass the 16-year-old into ending the relationship with the other teen, the report stated. A warrant was issued and Garcia was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of publishing, threatened to publish intimate visual materials, a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. Garcia remains in the Ector County Jail Friday on $3,000 surety bond. Prosecutors accused man of violating deferred adjudication. An Odessa man who agreed to behave himself for 6 years in the hopes prosecution would drop an aggravated sexual assault of a child charge against him has been arrested because prosecutors said he didn't live up to the terms of their agreement. Juan Alzano Jr., 21, when he was accused of penetrating the female sexual organs of a child under 14. Alonzo pled guilty in December 2017. And was placed on community supervision in part of a deferred adjudication agreement. On August 24th, Ector County Court shows prosecutors filed a motion for arrest warrant saying that they want Judge Dean Whalen of the 70th Ector County District Court to find Alonzo guilty of aggravated sexual assault of a child. According to their motion, the prosecutors allege Alonzo committed the crime of injury to a child, elderly person, disabled person in June, and failed at various times to register as a sex offender when he's supposed to annually successfully complete psychological counseling sessions, report to his community supervisor office, or submit to urine analysis and or breath testing. Alonzo, now 27, was booked into the Ector County Jail Wednesday and is being held without bail. Bonham sixth grader arrested. A sixth grade boy at Bonham Middle School on Friday became upset in class and threatened to bring a gun to school and shoot students. School leader at EISD police were notified. He was arrested and charged with threat or exhibition of a weapon, school grounds, or bus, a Class A misdemeanor, a news release said. Celebrate Halloween on a budget and avoid online scams. Spending on Halloween festivities this year is expected to return to pre-pandemic levels, with approximately 69% of consumers planning to participate in a Halloween-related activity, according to the National Retail Federation, NRF. Total consumer spending is expected to reach record $10.6 billion as revelers stock up on candy, costumes, and Halloween decorations. Seasonal pop-up stores are opening the doors, and many shoppers are actively searching for the perfect costume online, while others are breaking open their Halloween storage boxes and piecing together their 2022 costumes, or creating new ones from scratch. While many families prepare for Halloween festivities, concerns about inflation rates are still prevalent, and many consumers are stepping back to cut costs by comparatively shopping for the best deals online or shopping at discount stores. The NRF's 2022 Halloween Spending Survey found that 40% of Halloween shoppers plan to shop at discount stores and 31% plan to shop online. While online shopping is a great way to find a large variety of products and the perfect costume, reports the BBB scam tracker described multiple interactions in 2021 where shoppers were taken advantage of by fraudulent sellers. One Texas resident paid $120 for a costume from the popular Netflix show Squid Games and then found while scrolling TikTok. After receiving an initial confirmation email, the consumer never received their product or promised tracking number that followed the month. Tried contacting the seller multiple times about a refund and cancellation. At first, they replied and said my order was still being processed, but stopped replying after I continued to follow up with them. I can't figure out how to get my money back. To save money and avoid online scams this Halloween, Better Business Bureau recommends the following tips. Look around your home. Check your closet. There may be hidden surprises to throw together a winning costume. Doing this will only help save money, but will save space as well. Crafting your own costume at home is also a great way to involve family members or friends in the process. Rent a costume. If the idea of spending money on buying a costume isn't quite appealing because you will only wear it once, consider renting. Renting a costume leaves room in the budget and is truly only temporary. Research rental companies on BBB.org and be sure to inspect the condition of the costume and read the rental agreement carefully before signing anything. Buy in bulk. It may seem counterintuitive, but buying more can save your money. Buying in bulk lessens the cost per item and ounce. Bulk buying can be convenient on a night like Halloween when there might be more trick-or-treaters out this year. Factory rack candy will last even if not is given out for trick-or-treaters. Always check the return policy. Seasonal shops carry unique items for a short time in a transparent location on online. When shopping at this type of vendor, understand the store's return policy for making a purchase. Find out how long purchasers must keep the receipt or what happens if they are misplaced. Verifying store policies will help avoid mishaps like unwanted, broken, or faulty items being non-refundable. Remember, buying a bunch of products with the intent of simply returning it after October 31st is considered fraud. Shop smart online. When shopping from an online website, the first step is to ensure the URL starts with HTTPS. That includes a lock symbol. The S in the HTTPS stands for secure. Look up the website's private policy and contact information. If it's not clearly listed, or they only have an email at the point of contact, take this as a red flag and shop elsewhere. BBB recommends consumers use a credit card for online purchases instead of a debit card, as credit cards provide additional protection and fraudulent charges are easier to dispute. Visit BBB.org, avoid scams, for more tips on online shopping. Seasonal stores. If you decide to shop for a seasonal store, ask them they will be open after the holiday, how long they plan to stay open, and if they'll accept returns after Halloween is over. If they plan to close on November 1st or refuse returns after either, consider shopping elsewhere or take more time to be sure the item is exactly what you want before making the purchase. More tips for seasonal pop-up stores? Ask the owner if there's a website in case you have to contact them later. Save every receipt. Use a credit card to dispute problem charges with the card's issuer. Make sure you're clear on what items are final sale. Attending a special event or visiting a haunted house before purchasing tickets, research the group offering the experience and make sure that there are no complaints about the company hosting the event. BBB recommends consumers spend the time to research the event or company hosting the haunted house by checking out the company on BBB.org. Read what previous customers had said to see how the business responds to complaints. Checking BBB scan tracker and see if their consumers have filled a report with the event host. Searching the business online by adding the word complaint, reviews, or scam after the name for different results. For more tips on buying tickets, visit BBB.org. Obituaries. Granberry, Fred Wayne Phillips, Jr. took his final coffee break peacefully at his home surrounded by his loving family on Saturday, October 8, 2022. He was born on October 8, 1948 to the late Fred Phillips, Sr. and Minnie Conley. He graduated from Permian High School in 1967. Fred successfully owned and operated Phillips Texaco for 22 years and Vehicles in Motion for 14 years. In his spare time, he served as a member of the Odessa Chuckwagon Gang. Fred deeply loved and supported Pam and his daughters, grandkids, and great-grandchildren. He is survived by Pam Phillips, daughter Dawn Phillips of Longmont, Colorado, Michelle Cope of Chicago, Illinois, four grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. The celebration of life will be held Saturday, November 5th from 2 to 5 p.m. at Sledge Distillery, Toller, Texas. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to the V Foundation to help us declare victory over cancer at donate.v.org. Death notices. James Singleton Blackman, Odessa, 82, died Tuesday, October 18th in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, October 27th. 3821 North Burke Avenue, Odessa, Texas. Arrangements are Acre West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Aaron Jason Jones Burke of Lubbock, 44, died Wednesday, October 12th in Lubbock. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, October 24th at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Roberto Ortega Herrera of Odessa, 77, died Monday, October 17th in Odessa. Chapel services will be held at 4 p.m. Sunday, October 23rd at Acres West Funeral Chapel. After a brief 10 a.m. service on Monday, October 24th at Acres West, burial will be at American Heritage Cemetery in Midland County. Mario Bereza is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Midland, Sharon Janet Sanders, 70, died Saturday, October 15th in Midland. Celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. October 25th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, October 24th. Busy PHS student hopes to use homecoming title as platform. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Permian High School senior Hannah Douglas is a busy young woman. Douglas, who is the homecoming queen, is involved in many school activities, drum major for the band, in choir, vice president of the choir council, and a vocalist in Black Magic, the pop ensemble. Douglas, age 17, has been in band since 7th grade and said her real instrument is percussion, but she's enjoying the drum major role. She was formerly involved in theater and at the time of this interview was ranked number one at PHS. Being named homecoming queen was, quote, super cool, quote, I know that homecoming is a silly, random title, so I plan to do something more with it, something that means something, Douglas said. She hopes to use her platform for something such as raising awareness about gun violence in schools. If this is a tradition she could start, Douglas said it would be really cool. Douglas is undecided about where she's going to college, but wants to study social sciences and go to law school. Even with all the activities she juggles, Douglas seems to take it in stride. Quote, I think it's a lot of determination, a lot of sacrifice. I know my priorities, things like my schoolwork and how well my organizations do are the top of my priorities, Douglas said. She is still a normal high school student, so things like hanging out with her friends and having a balanced schedule are important. She has an older sister, Haley Douglas, age 20, who attended Permian. Her parents are Jennifer and Gary Douglas. Quote, She was also extremely bright, Douglas said of her sister. She finished number 7 in her class. We always say that we split all the fine arts in the family, because at one point in time, we've done all 6 fine arts. So I was band, choir, theater. She was orchestra, dance, and art, Douglas said. Hannah said she wouldn't be able to do everything she does without Haley as a role model. She said her whole family is extremely supportive. Douglas is able to spend all her time on school and doesn't have to work. Quote, I've been given that opportunity so I can succeed further in life. I understand that so much of what I am is owed to them, she said. Permian principal Delisa Stiles said Douglas is often recognized because she is multi-talented. Quote, but I would also like to add that she is a genuinely kind person. We are fortunate to have her as a student at Permian, and she is a true leader and impressively represents our school through many platforms, Stiles said in an email. It's flu season. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. A few weeks ago, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, said the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the CMS, released new guidelines for masking in hospitals and other healthcare facilities. Those guidelines allow those organizations to reduce the amount of masking based largely on community transmission rates. It's a great sign that the pandemic is nearing its end. Fortunately, the rates of community transmission are now low enough in Ector County that we have been able to relax some of our masking requirements at my hospital. I have worn a mask in the hospital every single time I've stepped out of my office for more than 2.5 years now. Not having to wear one everywhere I go in the building feels a bit odd. It's kind of like showing up at a party in casual clothes when everyone else is in cocktail dress. You just feel underdressed. Having said that, I am super excited to see people's faces again and to take that one more step toward heading back to normal. I am sure that underdressed feeling will go away soon, and I hope the transmission levels stay low enough in Ector County that strict masking will be a thing of the past and we are truly back to normal. There is one thing about normal, though, that I am not looking forward to, and that is the return of the traditional flu season. The precautions we have all been taking the last couple of years because of COVID, social distancing, limiting gatherings, masking, reducing touching to mouth, nose, and eyes, and frequent hand washing, have also really helped decrease the amount of flu. But as we are easing up on the COVID restrictions, flu is taking advantage. In the U.S., because of how the seasons flow and the traffic across the globe, we see flu later in the year than most of the world. Australia and New Zealand, because they are so far ahead of us, can really help us predict how the flu is going to show up here and hopefully give us some time to prepare. Europe precedes us, too, just by a few weeks, though, so we have less time to respond to trends from Europe. What they saw in Australia and New Zealand and are starting to see in Europe is a tough flu season. When I say a tough flu season, what I mean is more cases of flu and more severe flu cases. As we learned with COVID, large numbers of severe cases can put a big strain on availability of health care services. Even more frighteningly, there are not as many resources out there as there were when COVID hit us so very hard. The number of healthcare professionals that have left the profession since the advent of COVID number in the millions. The double hits of COVID and inflation have stretched many huge hospital systems to their breaking point, and many, many small hospitals across the nation, even here in the Permian Basin, have either closed or had to reduce services because of the lack of resources. Supplies are still a challenge. I am sure you have all noticed, while it gets better all the time, there are still periods of empty shelves at the grocery store. That is no different here at the hospital. I am constantly amazed at the things we struggle to get to do basic things in the hospital because they are just not available at any price. Those things will only make a tough flu season even more difficult. But there are things we can do to make the flu not so tough here in the U.S. and in the basin. First and foremost, please get the flu vaccine. I know the controversy of the COVID vaccination has led to many people being wary of all vaccines, but the flu vaccine has a very proven track record of minimal risk while either completely or partially reducing one's susceptibility to the flu. Please, please get vaccinated for the flu, and if you have concerns, speak to your health care provider. Second, if you are sick, please stay home and away from others to slow the spread of the disease. I understand that people need to work and go to school, and they are reluctant to stay home, especially with mild symptoms. This is the time to consider wearing a mask. In many of the more densely populated areas of the world, it has been considered good manners to wear a mask in public when you're not feeling 100%. It does make a difference on the spread of disease. Social distance whenever possible. That will help keep you from getting sick when people aren't staying home. Finally, always practice good hand hygiene and avoid touching your mouth, eyes, and nose. That is the biggest defense we all have against any illness. Stay safe this flu season by practicing prevention. If you do suspect you have the flu, please reach out to a healthcare provider as soon as you can for treatment. There have been some good flu treatments released in the last decade, but they must be given within a short period of symptom onset to be effective. In this, like so very many things with our health, seeking help early makes a big difference. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Early voting for the November 8th election and the Ector County Utility District election starts today through November 4th. Voters are welcome to call the elections office for location information. For Odessa, call 432-498-4030, and in Midland, call 432-688-4890. Registered voters may also visit the webpage for early voting schedules, election day vote centers, and sample ballots. Ector County, tinyurl.com/MRXN4YVD. Midland, tinyurl.com/36B5A3CT. Texas Secretary of State, www.sos.state.tx.us. The Bridge, 3901 East Yukon Road, has scheduled pumpkin patch benefiting the West Texas Food Bank and Bridge Kids Ministries through October 30th. The patch is open from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturdays, and from noon to 7 p.m. Sundays. Prices start at $1 and go up from there. Visit tinyurl.com/55V8J8JM. The Ector County Library at 321 West 5th Street has scheduled a Frankentoys toy workshop from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. today in the children's department. Create new toys by tearing apart old ones and putting them back together in whole new ways. Combine two or more toys to make something totally different. This is a family activity. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. The Odessa FFA Booster Club will present a goat and lamb validation event at 5 p.m. today at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 North Andrews Highway. Visit tinyurl.com/5fv63fyn. Glazers and United Way of Odessa have scheduled the 6th annual Bowling for Charity Bowling Tournament at 6 p.m. today at Synergy Odessa, 8250 Highway 191. There will be a costume contest, prizes, bowl a turkey, win a turkey, raffle, and silent auction. Fees include $500 for a five-man team, $125 per bowler, or $150 bowling lane sponsor. Register and mail entry fee to United Way of Odessa, Attention Serena Banuelos, 128 East 2nd Street, Odessa, Texas, 79761. Call 432-332-0941, email sbanuelos@unitedwayodessa.org, or visit tinyurl.com/2v58hns7.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.